Hi, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Amy Adler's How I Hire. Hi, welcome to How I Hire. How I Hire is meant to pull back all the layers on how people in all sorts of industries do hiring, think about recruiting, look at talent, and strategize to build a talent pipeline that works for their organization. As I have Eric Goodman here with me on the podcast, welcome. I'm so glad to see you here.
Thank you. It's such a pleasure to join you to talk about how we hire.
Well, thank you. Maybe to start, if we can, hear a little bit about your background and how you got to where you are and the really exciting things you're doing now.
Sure. No, I appreciate that. And I think, you know, in terms of my background, I had been in the corporate world and I actually was getting my master's degree working for one of those billion-dollar companies, a very large one where I had 30 plus reports, and decided after getting my master's degree to pursue my PhD as well. So after getting that, I decided not to return to the corporate world. I actually went into academia, where I was a professor in business. And then I spent over a decade as a business school dean and then chief academic officer, VP of education type roles for equivalent amount of time. So really, I'm a recovering academic now. Obviously, in those roles, I had hundreds of people over the years that I was involved with hiring. And certainly in my current role, where I work with businesses to really help them optimize their performance. And it comes down to people, process, and figuring out how you create a high-performing organizational culture. I work with companies and even individuals to really discover, leverage, and maximize their potential.
That's excellent. I knew you were administration in higher learning. I didn't know you were a professor.
Yeah.
That's super exciting.
You typically have to start out in some type of role in academia. I guess there are some organizations that might hire an administrator outside of the professorate, as they would say, but typically it's one of those things where you move from a professor into like a department chair or program director role into a dean role and so forth. So yeah, that was my career ladder for many years and had a lot of fun in that realm because you can make a big difference in terms of the impact and working obviously closely with industry. And even now, as I consult and work with companies, sometimes helping them figure out what they need strategically. I'm really a business strategist and a catalyst for change to help them realize their potential and figure out, you know, how do they do that and who they need on their team to be able to execute against that so they can create what they want to create.
Absolutely. And thank you for explaining that. So the notion of this high performance organization must rest on, as you say, process, but people as well, and getting the right people in the talent pipeline who are ready to move through the organization must be essential for everything, for performance, for delivering to customers, for living up to their cultural expectations, their mission, their values.
Yeah, exactly. I think, you know, a lot of times, depending on the industry, sometimes that is not something that is the priority, and people don't realize that to be able to get the things done, you've got to have the right people to execute. Sometimes it's often they've got the vision or they've got the strategies and tactics, but they don't invest as much in the people that they really need to take them where they need to go. And sometimes cutting corners or maybe hiring somebody that's not the best fit or maybe even mediocre in terms of the quality and the level of talent that they possess to take the organization where they want to go.
Sometimes, so that's interesting. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
So I'm sure people don't wake up every morning as they're going through a hiring process and go, you know what? I really want to find middling talent today. How does that happen? How does that happen in the face of something you and I were talking about in a prior conversation about hiring the right person because you know they're going to grow into the role and they're going to be amazing at it versus being okay with something that's just okay.
Yeah, well, you know, sometimes there's pressures in an organization in terms of the time to fill a position and other things that need to be done with a plan or certain strategies or initiatives, and they need to have a body in a seat sooner than later. So I see that. And sometimes too, you find that depending on the organization and who the hiring manager is, I have seen some managers that are maybe a little gun shy about hiring somebody that is really talented, because then are they actually intimidated by them? And is that person going to become their boss? And actually, I had that early in my career, where the person who hired me about a year and a half later, I was his boss. So it's sort of like a turn of tables. And at that point in time, I mean, he was very senior to me, twice my age and, you know, experienced. However, you have sometimes people that have a scarcity mindset or other, you know, things that they're wrestling with that might prevent them from hiring the best talent that they can possibly hire. And then, of course, you also have sometimes, and most of the time, some salary range or grades or, you know, bands that might preclude you from hiring somebody outside of that, that is really exceptional in terms of their talent, that if you have the opportunity to actually make a case for bringing that person on board, you might be able to convince the leadership that, you know, we need to really make an exception in this case, and here's why. So those are a few cases, and there's other reasons, but those are the most common things I see.
So I imagine overlaid, if we bring this to a current context, the absolute massive numbers of layoffs must make hiring for cost control a real thing. I'm going to have to wrap my brain around an actual case study in which somebody was genuinely threatened by a top performer, because we hear this as kind of lore all the time. Mm-hmm. I want to keep that in my back pocket. But for now, if we're talking about current context, if we're talking about what it means to control labor costs and that expense line, does it really mean that people have to dumb down, let's call it what it is, their talents and skills and expertise, because they're just looking to be a body in a seat themselves?
Well, you know, I don't know if dumb down is the right word, but of course, and this is nothing new, that there are people that are overqualified when they're looking at a particular role. And that's the other thing that can happen, because as a hiring manager looking at that, like, why would this person want this particular role? Like, it, on paper, at least based on their background and their qualifications and experience, it doesn't make any sense. And so, you know, it does create the necessity on the applicant's part to be able to tell the story, to be able to share that, whether in a cover letter or something that might get them through that initial screen, to say, well, you know what, you already have, you know, a C-suite level experience or maybe director level, and we're looking for this, you know, other lower level type position, or maybe your degrees or your certifications are way over like what we're looking for. And in part, it's understanding the rationale behind that. Some of the best hires I've made have been people that on paper, they've had gaps in their resume or things like that. And sometimes I'm intrigued, like, what's the story? What's the backstory here? Or what is this person? Or maybe they're, again, overqualified based on what they're doing. But especially, you know, during COVID and even prior to that, I think the great resignation that occurred, a lot of people rethinking their values and priorities in life. And so I know during the last couple of years, there's some incredible talent that's out there that have made personal choices that maybe to shift careers or change industries or do things or move to a different part of the country, which has made them available to an organization to consider a role they would have never considered before. And it might be they're taking care of an aging parent, or maybe there's something else that happened, life circumstance, divorce, or who knows what, and they're reinventing themselves and they want the opportunity. And it's always the, well, you got to have experience first or whatever. So there's always that dynamic also.
So with that as prelude to the larger discussion of hiring for proven performance or real strong aptitude or wisdom or whatever it is. I mean, now let's take it, if we take the salary element out of it, we've talked to you and I in the past about the notion of hiring the person who has the right heart and the right perspective on what needs to be done, even if they've not personally executed everything on the job description.
Yeah.
As it's written.
Right.
So tell me about a time where you had to do that. I want to hear that, like the blood and guts.
The blood and, oh my gosh. There's not one time that stands out, because that's a lot of the time for me. I mean, I think when I reflect on my career when I in hiring and where I was in that role as a hiring manager, I think I was probably more concerned early on. And I should also share with you, when I got my advanced degrees in graduate studies, both at the master's level and then along with my PhD, but more so on the master's level, I took every HR course that I could take that within my program. And I was actually had the opportunity to teach some HR courses, you know, at the university as well. So, you know, like staffing and labor relations and things like that. And so recruiting and looking at that. And obviously that was a couple decades ago. When you look at the best thinking at that time, it's like you're hiring for education and experience, right? Like that was pretty much it. And I think for me, looking beyond that to the other characteristics and traits in terms of things that are not necessarily a hard skill as much as those things are, or maybe, you know, that the experience shows. I mean, we know in hiring, probably one of the best indicators of future performance is past performance, right? That's sort of like a given. So like, what have they demonstrated in the past and what does that mean? For me, the thing that I really am passionate about is, do they have a growth mindset in terms of that? I have one, and I believe in this idea that they can learn and they can show me and talk about times where they had to learn something in the past and what did that look like. I tend to err towards that. You know, are they a quick study? Can I get them up to speed? Now, there are times where it's like a must know, like it's non-negotiable. We don't have the time to train you and we need somebody that can step in and do the job like tomorrow. And we don't have to do that. I would much though rather have somebody that has the attitude that can grow and is positive and is going to be a team player and has the communication skills and listens and will show initiative and all of those things, than the person who's got all the technical skills and is not a person I would ever want to go to lunch with, you know? And that comes down to personality as well, which is really probably education, experience, and personality. Personality is probably the thing I didn't have on my radar screen as much as a younger hiring manager, I guess you could say. But that has really shifted. And I would say, you know, personality, understanding that, and the cultural fit, and are they passionate about? Are they willing to learn? Are they motivated? And again, you know, those are the things. Are they a self-starter? And it obviously depends on the role. There's some roles where maybe they don't need to be that. But in general, you know, those are the things that I really think take precedence. And yeah, there have been some people that, thinking back on paper, that didn't check all the boxes. And, you know, sometimes you've got to be cautious of that from an HR perspective, depending on what you're advertising and your HR policies and practices and what the job description states. And sometimes it's making sure that you're really clear, even before you post a job, what are the must-haves? Like, is it really a must, or is that preferred? And there's some hard conversations sometimes that have to occur around that, because you got to navigate the fine line between flexibility and maintaining fairness in their recruitment process.
I'm so heartened to hear this, because there's so much talk about that required versus preferred these days. Mm-hmm. And maybe because it's a buyer's market. I mean, there's no other way to say it when you hear about 1,000 layoffs or whatever it is every single day. Those people are now trying to figure out how to sell their skills. And when companies have the opportunity to make their filters really, really strong, that requirements, or sorry, the preferred elements become requirements because they can. It is so refreshing to hear that there are companies, there are organizations and hiring managers who are willing to say, here's where I can bend. Here's where I will be flexible for the right person who has the right communication style, who has a personality that is charming and engaging and somebody I would want to go to lunch with and who can fit into our pre-existing culture in a powerful and connecting kind of way. We don't, as resume writers, we don't hear that a lot. We hear, here are the requirements and the rest of it, we don't care about. Like, tell me what you can do that fits what the hiring team is looking for. And you're saying, hey, I have emotional intelligence around this and other people should be wise to that too.
Right. Well, yeah. And I love the fact that you mentioned emotional intelligence, because that's another thing I look for. Like, you know, do they have that self-awareness and are they able to self-regulate? I have seen people that have had something trigger them, even at a president level in an organization, where literally they blew their top and they were escorted out of the building like the same day because they just did not have that emotional intelligence or the ability to do that, or the other awareness, of course, and the ability to influence other people. And so that I think is key. And I think the other part of it is, in this competitive space, you know, your ability to tap into a broader market is really key. And I saw that, you know, like about a decade ago, I was at a university and we had designed a master's in accounting, and I had an advisory board made up of employers that represented, you know, the big accounting firms at the time. And there was one in particular that started really looking at that and saying, you know, obviously in accounting, there's certain things with a CPA and other requirements you need to have in terms of the number of credits to sit for even and take the CPA test, depending on the state you're in. But ultimately, this one company was probably one of the early ones of the big accounting firms to say, you know what, we really want to look at competency. And at that time, actually, I was at the nation's leading, running the college for business at the nation's leader in competency-based education. So it was a good fit in terms of them saying, you know what, if they have the skills and they can demonstrate the competencies in certain positions, maybe they don't even need to have a bachelor's degree. Maybe we can look at other ways to figure that out. But what that did is open the talent pool significantly. And then also, I think, to think about what you can do internally, and the accounting field as an example, there's still some challenges in the pipeline of people coming up, particularly those with more advanced degrees also. But you can bring in people that maybe have a different career path that can bring in new perspectives, creativity, or innovation to your existing culture, and, you know, sometimes retool them if they've got the critical thinking and problem solving skills. Maybe they don't even have the degree in accounting, but they were exceptional in a sort of general education or an English major or journalism or who knows what. How do we layer in those skills to actually get them to be able to, you know, do what we need in that particular job? So,
well, again, really refreshing to hear that. Maybe you know about me, I have a handful of degrees too, not at the PhD level. So I believe in the higher education process.
Sure.
I'm really astounded by job descriptions that say qualification must have a bachelor's degree, meaning whatever decision somebody made 20 years ago is now changing the way they're operating now, and insofar as they have already had a spectacular career.
Yeah.
So I think it shows up on both ends.
Yeah, exactly. And I think the other thing that you mentioned was, you know, the potential to grow into it. We had that conversation. And and I look at it with that growth mindset of, you know, if they weren't born that way or they haven't done it, doesn't mean they can't do it. If they have the right attitude, and is there potential that they've demonstrated through other achievements and things that they've been able to do, even if it's in a different industry or whatever, do they have that capability? And I also, as a manager, have always approached employees with the idea of understanding like the self-fulfilling prophecy or the Pygmalion effect in terms of what I believe. And, you know, some of those studies go back to education where it's like teachers were told like, these are the gifted students. And of course those students became the gifted students. They were no different than, but because you label somebody, then it becomes that. And I think, you know, if you as a leader in an organization and a hiring manager really empower people with the tools and resources and the training to be the best that they can be and to be effective in the role that, you know, and doing the tasks that you're asking them to do, then they'll flourish. But if you think they're not going to be successful, you treat them or, you know, there's obviously different management leadership styles. Some, you know, people like label like the micromanager or things like that versus the person that's really empowering somebody to go and figure it out. You know, that can make a big difference as well in terms of, you know, how you hire and who's doing the hiring, because every person in an organization tends to approach that a little bit different, even based on their personality and who they connect with and also what they're looking for, what's important to them. And as a hiring manager, you want the diversity in your organization, of course. You want to make sure you've got that because that brings different perspectives and can help you navigate, particularly with what's going on in, you know, the broader context in the marketplace. And are you mirroring what's happening there with your employee base? I mean, there's just a lot of advantages to that. But I think it's recognizing that and making sure that hiring managers understand that as well, and that they're not biasing one way or the other just based on personality or based on those requirements and other things if they aren't really critical or essential, right?
I definitely appreciate your hearing you say that and to get that sort of 30,000 foot view on self-awareness, for lack of a better term.
Yeah.
But maybe this is a good time at this moment to make a little bit of a shift and talk about the work you've been doing over the last little bit with assessing the way people think about themselves and the way they interact with their cohort, whether that's their team or their peers or their own executives or their customers. We've talked a lot about it, but I will let you take
it.
Yeah,
I appreciate it. Yeah, it's pretty amazing because I've used a lot of different assessments over the years in hiring individuals. And, you know, some are very specialized to a particular role in an organization. But in general, I've used a number of personality assessments that just help tap into understanding who this person is. And one I've been using more recently is it's a game changer compared to all the other ones because it's a values-based system. And what it allows you to do is really understand that individual's strengths. And there's some other assessments still that I like to go a little deeper on the strengths that I still use when I'm working with organizations. But this one, it's actually something that I can invite listeners to check out if they want to understand what this report looks like. But it's this idea that we tend to communicate how we want to be communicated to. And I know I learned the golden rule, you know, treat others how you want to be treated. And it's sort of the same thing. You tend to connect with people that you know, like, and trust. And the common denominator around that is personality. And that can bias hiring decisions as well. And you create a lot of like mini-me's in an organization, which isn't the healthiest thing, or a lot of yes people, depending on the hiring manager. But with this system, it's really a tool. It's a communication methodology to understand, based on what's important to somebody else, how do I communicate? How do I connect with them quickly? Because, you know, you don't have a second chance to make a first impression, right? And so as I work with individuals, whether it's somebody that's in the, you know, a career transition, a job search process, helping them, even from a coaching perspective, I do some of that work as well with individuals to get really clear on what they're passionate about, what they want to do. This is a tool I use with everybody I meet just to help understand who they are, but they understand their strengths as a benefit of this report, but they also get some communication tips. So people can go to crackmycode.com/communicate, and it's a quick 90-second that it'll take. And you'll actually on that site, crackmycode.com/communicate, see these cards. And you're just simply putting the information that's on each of these cards. You're ordering the cards holistically in terms of what's most important to least important to you. And it's a quick framework, and I'll just give a thumbnail sketch, but people, when they get the report, will really understand it because huge implications for being able to get that job offer, to be able to pass through, to make sure your resume is optimized, you know how to interview, you know how to answer your star story based on who your audience is. And it's really this idea of almost like based on this personality profile, each of these different types within the personality, you can think of them as being like an individual that might not be speaking the same language as you. It's like men are from Mars, women are from Venus. There's a great book by John Gray many years ago. And it's the same thing when it comes to this. And so the system is actually, it's from a company called Codebreaker Technologies, and they're the world leader in personality coding technology. And the system is called BANK, which is simply an acronym for B stands for blueprint, A stands for action, N stands for nurturing, and K stands for knowledge. And so within that, and I'll just give a quick thumbnail sketch of your blueprint person, you can think about a box, and your blueprint person is the type of person that lives inside of a box. And you can think about a blueprint too, the color blue, sort of cool, calm, but a blueprint is a plan for a foundation or a house or building something, right? So they value things like stability and predictability. They don't want anything that is risky. They want to have systems in place. They prefer routine and tradition and things like that. So that's your blueprint personality. And you can think as I go through this for yourself, like which category you fall into or who you know that really is sort of that way. Then you have your action personality. And if you use an example of a box, these people don't want to have anything to do with the box. They are blasting out of the box. These are your movers, shakers. They want freedom and flexibility, spontaneity. They want to have fun. It's all about image and excitement, and they want to win. So these are the people that love to compete. And they like to go fast. And so, again, that's the action personality. And then you have the nurturer. And your nurturing personality is a person that's all about relationships. It's about connecting with other people and making a difference and an impact. And if you think about a box, for a nurturer, they would be recycling a box, or they'd bring people into their box. Or if they had a box, they would give it, be the first one to give it to somebody else because they want to help other people. And for them, it's about authenticity and morality and making a contribution and being involved and also sort of personal growth. And then you have the knowledge personality. And in the example of the box, these would be the people that invent the box, or they think outside of the box or create a new box, or like maybe it's a sphere or some other shape. I don't know. But they are the creators, the innovators. And for them, they value information and learning and logic. And they like science and discovery and universal truths. And they want to make sure they have accurate, you know, information. They can understand the big picture and stuff. So within that, it's understanding who you are and how you can optimize yourself. What I love about the system too, going back to the growth mindset, is it's built around a growth mindset. And I actually train in organizations and individuals to optimize themselves in terms of how do I step into these different personas? Because we can do that. We have a choice. We're all a little bit of everything. And rather than labeling somebody as extroverted or introverted or judging or thinking or feeling or dominant or whatever that a lot of these other systems do, it recognizes you're everything. And the goal is to help you learn how do you meet people where they're at so you can communicate in their same language. And so for an example, going back to the star story, when you're talking about maybe, you know, some situation and some task and, you know, your achievements and everything else, how you tell that story to somebody who's a blueprint, you want to walk them through step by step. Here's the process. Here's what we did. And, you know, understanding the systems you put in place and things like that. You'd emphasize that. Maybe the action is like, you know, we did this and we crushed it. Like, we got amazing results. We increased revenue, you know, 37%. And we did all that, you know, whatever it is. And the nurture is like, you know, I brought a team together and we all, you know, contributed, and collectively we identified, you know, the strengths of each other, and, you know, it was, everybody was involved. I mean, it's a different thing in the knowledge. You want all the facts and figures, like, you know, in terms of how you explain it. So that's a quick level, but I use that to help not only individuals optimize the information and, you know, how they go about the process of thinking about their achievements and how they present them in the recruiting process and interview preparation and so forth, but also to recognize, you know, who they are as an individual. And in some cases, I've had people that have come to me that they're, you know, like they're starting a new job and they already got the offer, but they want to make sure they recognize, you know, maybe they haven't been able to move up the career ladder in the past, or they're stagnant and they want to make sure they have a strong start with the company. How can I build connections quickly? How can I get that know, like, and trust with people that are, I'm just now meeting as a new employee in this organization? Those are things that I can help people do so they can learn very quickly. And even what I find is many people that have been on the technology or the engineering front, or people that are traditionally labeled as introverts, that are exceptional with technical skills. If you don't have those interpersonal skills and the emotional intelligence, sometimes that's a limiting factor. And I've worked with people who have been able to increase their emotional intelligence and figure out, how do I connect? How do I become visible and seen in the organization? So they're the first person that they think about when they want to fill another higher level role, versus being one of those, you know, people that are just sort of a cog in the wheel. And so it's really about, the work I do is useful as well. When you think about, I actually do sales training with it also, to help train people on that. When you think about it, the career search process is a sales process, right? You're selling yourself. And then when you're in the job, you're selling your ideas and your concepts, or you're selling yourself or your boss on giving you a raise or a promotion or everything else. So the work I do really centers around helping people have more influence, more impact, and as a byproduct, of course, more income, which is always a nice thing as well. So that's the system, and you can use it in a lot of different ways. And I've used it to help companies in the hiring process figure out, like, who do they need for what type of role based on that. So you've got a general idea that can be a filter, you know, depending on the role, to understand optimally, knowing, though, again, it's a growth mindset. There's not one persona, and there's not just four. When you think about it, there's four different types, and they come in a different sequence when you sort those cards. So there's really 24 different permutations that could exist. And so it's really fun to use that as a hiring manager, as a tool, and also as in a, you know, somebody that's going through the interview process, to be aware of, who am I talking to, and letting that person determine your presentation and how you answer a question. Because it's about communication. It's almost like each of these, like the blueprint could be English, the action could be Spanish, the, you know, nurturing could be French, and that could, knowledge could be German. It's that different sometimes. And you see it, you can think about your own organization. Sometimes you see it, you know, dramatic differences when you go to a marketing department versus an HR or compliance or regulatory department or the finance department and so forth, in terms of the types of people that work there, IT department and so forth. And so it really plays out, and sometimes people are just not connecting. So that's a little bit of the work that I'm utilizing to really help people accelerate their success.
It's such a fascinating program, and we've spoken extensively about it. I was totally taken in by it. One thing that just struck me as you were just speaking, uh-huh, is French, Spanish, German. It's possible to be multilingual. And that's, it's not a zero-sum game, if you can use that kind of phraseology. Somebody right. who speaks multiple languages can switch the mm-hmm. way they speak so that their audience understands what they are trying to say. You know, we hear this phrase, we see the world not as we are, but as, or people not as we are, but as they are. In mm-hmm. this sense, if we see them as they are, we yeah. get the option to choose which language, and it doesn't change us. It just makes us understood. And yeah. what a happy confluence of communication we have mm-hmm. when we're all speaking in a way that connects.
Absolutely.
I don't yeah. know if you speak another language, but I speak passable Spanish, and I've had this experience where I'm speaking Spanish to somebody who speaks Spanish natively, doesn't know a lot of English. They speak English back to me, and we're doing our best, right? We're trying to see where mm-hmm. the other person is. What yeah. if I take my, you know, me, I'm all about, like, let's get, you know, the knowledge. What are the facts? I got to know this thing before I make an informed decision. And I have a nurturer. Mm-hmm. Right? Right. And I hope people would think I was kind, but I don't know if I speak that way, because I'm speaking the way I want to be spoken to.
Exactly. So. And that's what happens, because, you know, recognizing that maybe you've got a nurturing hiring manager, and you start going into all these facts and figures and information, and you didn't take the time to even acknowledge them or ask a simple question, maybe, or they asked something about your family or something that, you know, within the HR construct, you're like, is that a legal question you're thinking about? Like, can they ask that? Like, do I need to answer that? Like, that's private information. They don't need to know that. Like, but it's, you're just operating from a different space versus, I love the multilingual. That's exactly what it is. It's teaching people to have the skill to shift and pivot so they have more influence and they can build stronger relationships in their life, not just professionally, but personally. And this is a game changer when it comes to those personal relationships, marriage, dating, parenting, you name it. Once you understand this system, it can transform not just your revenue and income in your job and what your career, but also, you know, the wealth you have in your relationships. So it's a really good way of thinking about it.
Maybe we need to imagine a world in which both parties are fluent in many languages and they can
exactly
switch what the way they're speaking to meet the other and to emphasize certain points, pull back, reframe, reconnect.
Exactly. Yeah.
Make that, a meaningful connection in every possible way.
And absolutely. And that's, it's emotional intelligence. And at the end of the day, and interesting, the company that created this system, their mission is to connect and empower humanity. You think about it, there's 8 billion people on this planet, or close, 6,500 different languages. If we want to talk about the multilingual thing, what if the common denominator was this type of a framework where you can understand that? And personality science is nothing new. It dates back to Hippocrates, who's the father of medicine, who said, you know, you thought you could categorize the human race into the theory of the four temperaments. And if you did and you treated people differently, you'd get better outcomes. And I think to your point, like, what if everybody understood this and could actually speak the language of the other person and shift and be multilingual? Oh, I'm speaking to somebody who speaks Spanish. For me to do that, and yeah, I've traveled to other countries. I don't speak a lot of different languages, but I've been in the situation where I've been in another country and no one speaks, you know, English or the broken little bit I know, where they're not recognizing anything. And you're not going to influence somebody. You can't get, you know, things done if they're not understanding what you're talking about. And sometimes it's that same way in an organization. And what's so cool is they've actually taken this technology, and there's AI tools, including a Google plugin for Chrome, that you can go on somebody's LinkedIn. If you're using LinkedIn in the job search process, you can push a button and say, oh, this is the person that speaks Spanish. So when I reach out and I'm sending a connection request, or maybe if I'm crafting this to this hiring manager, this is how I need to, you know, craft that. And you can use the same type of AI tool to analyze your resume, your cover letter. How are you showing up? How's your LinkedIn profiles, your own profile showing up? And are you going to attract the type of opportunities that you want to attract? And then, of course, if you're in an organization, using it even to increase the pool of your candidates, how is your position description even written? Who are you likely to attract? Is your description written for those English speakers or the Spanish or French? Or are you able to create a multilingual job description or post so that you have not just, you know, if you think about a random distribution, if you had 25% in every category, if you're writing a position's description, and what you find is, if whether it's HR or maybe historic, whoever created the job description, it's typically written in the language of the person who wrote it, of course, because they spoke English or they spoke French or whatever, and it's not multilingual. So that's one thing, you know, being able to just simply work with a company to help them optimize their job descriptions is a game changer, and they can dramatically increase their talent pool and the number of applicants who look at the job description and say, oh my God, this is for me, because it speaks partly my language, right? So there's all sorts of implications.
Well, seriously, what a win. And for those of you who are listening, not watching, you might not have known, but Eric's been holding up these four cards. With each of the four elements, or the four communication styles, or the four value systems, all these bright colors. And I know that they're on the website, say, if you will, the website.
Sure. They can just go to crackmycode.com/communicate. And it literally takes 90 seconds. You're going to look at those cards, sort them, put in some information, and you'll get a report immediately that will tell you some of your strengths, which you can obviously build into what you're doing in the job search process as well. And the nice thing for an organization is this is a similar thing that you can license for your organization. So if they're interested in that, they can reach out to me and do that, so they can use this in their hiring process and have their own link that they can share. And you can embed it in the application process. You can wait to do it. But the nice thing is, compared to most assessments, this is a completely disruptive one, because for a very low investment, I could provide this report to 1,000 people, 2,000, 20,000 a month, or, you know, 10 candidates, whatever. It doesn't cost me any more to do that. So they're getting some benefit, and it's a feel-good thing for somebody, even if they don't ultimately get the job offer, to have something that's valuable, that's tangible, that helps them understand themselves, and also some communication tips. And you're training them to then understand how to communicate if and when you do hire them, and you're going to be working with them, so they're a more effective communicator as well. So it's just crackmycode.com/communicate. And the AI tool, you know, again, there's LinkedIn. You can go on any website. If you've got a marketing department, I mean, it goes beyond HR, you know, in terms of optimizing your communication. And typically when I do in sales, what I find is people triple their conversion rates. And so it's the same thing when you think about hiring, like, okay, what is your time to fill? Are you able to fill those positions more quickly because you're attracting the right candidates, or maybe a broader pool of candidates that really are a great cultural fit with your organization?
Well, what fascinating stuff, my friend.
Yeah, I think so. I would agree. Fascinating and powerful.
Fascinating and powerful. Definitely changed the way I think about how I speak, how I think about things, and some things I know about myself or thought things were true that maybe aren't, or ways that I can become slightly more multilingual myself. So excellent. I appreciate your sharing your strategy with me. If people want to reach out to you about this, what's the best way for them to find you?
Yeah, the best way to find me is on LinkedIn, and it's just Eric Goodman with the number 2 after it. I also have, for people I know that might be listening that are interested in the hiring process and everything else, I've got a weekly, actually twice a week it comes out, newsletter on LinkedIn, also called Confidence in Leadership, where I talk about everything from mindset and habits and routines and how do you overcome limiting beliefs and optimizing and getting really clear on your own sort of way of being and what you're doing. And I wrote one recently that I just popped in my head. It was on the SWOT analysis, which is a typical thing used, strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats applied to your own life, you know, your personal SWOT analysis. So people can go through that. And I think anytime you're thinking about your career, you got to incorporate yourself, and you are your own business. No one's going to advocate for you. So there's that aspect of it. But really, connecting on LinkedIn is the best way to do that, and checking out the Crack My Code link. And if somebody is interested as well in really developing their leadership skills beyond the newsletter, one thing I'd mention, I've got a best-selling book, From Teacher to Leader, and you can go to teachertoleader.com and find that. And there's a lot of reflective exercises in there, and really, it's a competency-based book. And so it goes from A to Z, from everything to, you know, from attitude and branding and different competencies for you to think about it in terms of your own skill set as a leader. And when I talk about leadership, every one of us is a leader. You don't have to have a formal leadership position. So how do you step into a leadership role in terms of how you show up, no matter what your formal position is? And that's really the context. And then it's actually built around, for a hiring manager, the second half of the book is a mentor-mentee sort of workbook, if you will, where it's structured on a weekly program that could go on, and structured actually around a 6-month period for people to go in and have topics they can actually talk to their employee about as well. So it's a really great, rich resource to help people accelerate the talent pipeline within their organization as well. So I thought I would mention that.
Oh, I'm so glad you did. I'm so glad you did.
Yeah.
You bring such a wealth of knowledge and experience to the conversation. I am so grateful that we have formalized this. I know we've had this in bits and pieces over the last couple of months, and I'm glad that we are talking like this and sharing with our listeners both your history and the way that you think about hiring and did when you were building programs around management and HR and accounting, of course, and the way that you are now helping businesses succeed in the same way, and individuals, of course, too, and helping them come together in through meaningful communication that you didn't have access to before. So again, thank you for your time and your wisdom. And I know we will share many conversations in the future.
Yeah, I look forward to that. And thank you for the work you're doing in helping people really encapsulate and present their career in a way that's going to resonate with employers as they're looking to transition or up level on their skill set. Because I know you do a phenomenal job with that. So I think it's about having an impact, right? And making a difference for people. So
thank you. We do what we can, and we share what we know, and we are finding a way forward and helping as many people communicate in the best possible way.
Absolutely. Well, thank you again for the opportunity to connect with you and your listeners. I appreciate it.
The pleasure is entirely mine. Thank you.